15. Luke swam out of a sea of, not pain, not shock, but something between exultation and complete confusion. His back was against a mound of rubble, and his wife and the girl were beside him. He couldn't remember their names or his own. Red fluid dripped down upon his shoulder. He craned his neck to look up and saw a body on the mound above him, that of a human man. Its right arm was missing, and blood poured down the rubble below, one stream of it pooling and then dripping onto Luke. Luke, that was it, Luke. And Mara, and Tahiri, and the Yuuzhan Vong, and Nyax. Luke rose, saw his lightsaber a few meters away, and yanked it to him with a casual display of the force. It struck his palm with far more energy than he'd intended, and he dropped it again. Then he saw Nyax standing beneath the hole in the black wall. The hole, one of the construction droid's wrecking claws still within it, was 20 meters up. Nyax danced on the pile of rubble beneath it. His was the uncoordinated, artless dance of a child. It was the dance of joy. Mara rose beside him. Luke had known she was unhurt. "Force energy," she whispered. This must have been a wellspring of it, he thought. The old Jedi temple must have been built above, because it was here. They were guarding it, and guarding the planet from it. Nyax finished dancing. He turned to look at the Jedi. His expression was so full of uncomplicated happiness that it seemed impossible that he would ever try to hurt them. Nor did he attack them now. He simply raised a hand. Above him, a portion of the ceiling, a plug some 10 meters across, shot straight up and out of sight. Debris rained down but drifted to one side before it could hit Nyax. Tremendous crashing noises emerged from the hole above, and the walls all around them began to shake. Tahiri joined Luke and Mara, tucking something away in her backpack. "We're in trouble," she said. One of the advantages of running around in a lawless ruined city several kilometers deep, face reflected, was there was always gear to find, such as this air taxi. It had been perhaps the 30th one he'd seen since leaving the Jedi, the 4th undamaged one he'd come across, and the first one to start up with a single press of the controls. Now he roared along the tumbled canyons of Coruscant, following a comm beacon, keeping well below rooftop altitude. It was a necessary precaution. He saw a lot of coral skippers. All seemed to be heading toward one location, the same location he'd recently fled. He reached the vicinity of the beacon, gained until the signal was its strongest. That put him directly opposite the collapsed corner of a building. He could see something shining silver there. A simple antenna, attached so recently that nothing had had time to grow on it. No dust or soot had darkened it. "Face to Kel," he said. "I see your antenna." "Drop 6 stories and drift over to the next building. Come in the first big window," Kel answered. "The access to where I am is in the main chamber there." "On my way." Face lost altitude and sideslipped. He peered in through the shattered viewport of what had once been a luxury apartment, could see the stairwell reaching from the ceiling. He gunned his thruster and crashed through the framework around the viewport, then cut power. His air taxi dropped 0.5 meter to the floor. Seconds later, he squeezed in through the access hatch of the vehicle named Ugly Truth. Kel was above him in the pilot seat. He didn't turn around. "Did you feel something a couple of minutes ago?" Kel asked. "No." "Good, me either, then." Face looked up through the cockpit viewport at the jumble of rubble overhead. "Do you really have enough explosives to blast through that?"
Approximately, but that's not what we're going to do."
"Ah.
A detonation like that might damage this frail little flower of an escape ship."
Kel pointed down toward his feet. "But the building wall on that side isn't a support wall. Support comes from the building's metal skeleton. So I've planted shaped charges to blow that wall out."
"And then what?"
"And then I hit the topside nose repulsors. We tilt forward. I hit the thrusters. We punch free. And we rotate for a while, everybody screaming and vomiting, until I regain control."
"Kel, sometimes I hate you."
"Yeah, but I'm still the best pilot you ever saw."
"Where are the others?"
"En route, I got a comm message to them."
"How? There are kilometers of rubble between us and them. A comm message couldn't possibly penetrate." Exasperated, Kel finally did look down at his leader. "Do you remember something about us putting a sensor package up at rooftop, then running a direct cable down so Danny and Baljos could get a constant sensor feed?" "Oh, that's right. I broadcast to that sensor package." Never mind, I get you now. I'll set up for the others getting here." The hole above Nyax's head widened. No more rubble poured down upon him. Instead, sunlight did. First it was a tiny shaft, then it broadened into a blue-white column of brilliance. He bathed in the light, held out both hands to capture it, rubbed it into his cheeks. Luke could feel to hear his sense of shock. It matched his own. "Did he drive a hole all the way to the surface?" she asked. "I think so," Luke said. He turned his attention to the beings at the summit of the construction droid. He could feel their confusion, too. Nyax, his objective accomplished, had released them. As their volition returned, their physical exertions, their outrage at the way they had been violated for so long, overwhelmed them. "I have to get up there," Luke said. "Persuade them to drive that thing out of here before the building comes down."
"No, you don't," Mara said.
He looked at her, surprised at such a merciless, unnecessarily cruel statement. But then he sensed her amusement at his mistake.
"Just tell them," she said.
Luke reached up and found minds, dozens of them, all receptive to the Force. In the wash of Force energy emerging from the crack in the wall, he found he could reach any of them, all of them. He projected a strong demand for silence, a sense of calm, and could feel them quiet. Then he formed a picture in his head. The building collapsing, the construction droid driving in reverse to get away. He projected that image with all the strength he could muster, bolstered by the Force wellspring. He felt them react, shock, and then belief. In moments he heard the metal tower's engines roar again, and could feel their intention to crash their way back out through the rubble pile behind them. Luke thumbed his lightsaber into incandescence and marched toward the creature with Irek Ismaran's face. "Let's finish this." But Nyax, ignoring him, lifted straight up into the air and floated up through the hole his Force powers had made. In a moment he was out of sight. Danny, Elisar, and Bindi scrambled in through the access hatch. "Take the seats forward," Face ordered. "These rear ones are for the Jedi. We don't want people climbing over each other when they board. Co-pilot seat is mine. Where's Baljos?"
"He's staying," Bindi said, "instead of me."
Face sighed. Once it became likely that resistant cells would be of little use here, he'd told Bindi to pack up for a return to Borleos. He hadn't anticipated Baljos being so resistant to having his studies cut short. Baljos's choice here might prove to be a scientific boon some day, or it might be a useless way to commit suicide, but it was Baljos's choice. Face dogged the hatch shut, then struggled up the makeshift ladder and into the co-pilot seat. He strapped himself in.
"Ready when you are."
"Boom," Kel said. He thumbed a hand remote. The ugly truth rocked as the wall beneath its keel blew out into the street beyond. Kel didn't wait to evaluate the situation, the size of the hole. He shoved his control yoke, and the transport lurched forward. Face's stomach rose into his throat as the transport leaned out into the open air above the avenue, then leaped free of the building to plummet nose down toward the ground. The construction droid's internal turbo lift opened, and the Jedi stepped out into the machine's topside control chamber. The scores of people packed into the chamber didn't notice them. Their attention was riveted on the forward viewports. Beyond them, mounds of rubble were falling away, and beyond hovered a cloud of coral skippers. Even as the construction droid burst out into sunlight, the coral skippers opened fire, pouring plasma bursts into the machine's front face. Shocks from impact points dozens of stories down rocked the control chamber. Diagnostic screens lit up, alarms blared. Tattered Amelian workers who had minutes ago been mind-controlled slaves now shrieked, possessed again of enough intelligence to realize that their doom was at hand.
"We've got to get them out," Tahiri said. "The weapons..."
Luke shook his head. "This droid's weapons won't do much against coral skippers. We have to use other weapons."
"What weapons?"
Mari said.
Us.
Luke raised his voice, drawing on the force to strengthen it. Everyone out! Down the emergency stairs! Don't take the turbolift, it's evil! He added the mental image of the turbolift snapping open and shut like the mouth of a malevolent carnivore. The Coruscant survivors continued shrieking, but crushed forward toward the two opposite stairwell exits, leaving the Jedi some room in the middle. The parting of the Sea of Flesh also gave them a clearer view of the Coral Skipper formation and the incoming plasma fire.
That fountain of Force energy is what made Nyack stronger, Luke said. It's pure power, and we can use it too.
To demonstrate, he raised a hand like an orchestra conductor, and a mound of rubble against a building 100 meters ahead rose into the air. Luke clenched his fist and drew it toward him, and the rubble swept toward the construction droid. The coral skippers to the rear of the formation had no chance. Chunks of duracrete, stone, and ferrocrete plowed into them from behind. Dovin Basel singularities snapped into position to swallow some of the improvised missiles, but even that was not enough. Luke's missiles smashed into Yorick coral, sweeping coral skippers out of the way. Eyes wide, Tahiri mimicked Luke's gestures, but with the face of a building to their left, to the right of the coral skippers. Chunks of facing blew forth from the building, hurtling and falling among the coral skippers. Mara continued to add her voice and her force presence to the orders Luke had given, spurring the workers to flee more quickly. But most of her attention was on the chamber's controls, its walls and ceiling features. She found what she wanted and reached up to undo a hatch in the ceiling. Bright light spilled in from above, and a metal ladder lowered. She went up topside. Coral skippers rose from the formation in sudden flight, attempting to get away from the stream of crude projectiles, but those who rose first ran into another stream, this one moving much faster. Chunks of rock and duracrete pounded into the Yorick coral, eroding it like a super-powered sandblaster, destroying those vehicles. At first Luke thought that Mara had initiated that attack, adding her strength to his and Tahiri's, but he realized after only a moment that it felt wrong. He leaped up through the hatch Mara had opened, landing beside her on the construction droid's roof. Tahiri was only a second behind him. From here, they had a clearer view of the sky full of coral skippers and of the ziggurat behind them. From the ziggurat emerged a column of rubble. As it rose, it parted, arcing away from its point of emergence in all directions, like a water spray. But this spray was being flung kilometers in every direction, chewing through building tops and coral skippers as it landed. And above its center, where the rubble no longer rose, floated Nyack's. Giant boulders danced in and out through the rubble spray, weaving a lovely spiral through the air. "Another Jedi Academy graduate," Tahiri breathed. "He can lift really big rocks." "Very funny," Luke said. He gauged the leap from the construction droid's roof to the nearest solid surface on the ziggurat, decided they could make it. "Let's go." Vicky heard a noise in the distance, a roar as if some dam had finally opened its valves to let countless tons of water through. The floor rumbled under her feet. She ignored it. She ignored the pain in her wrists, pain caused by her struggles against her bindings. Those struggles had gone on until she'd found a jagged piece of metal protruding from a wall, and now she was free again. She reached the Tursons' apartment building and the floor of their chambers. She was trembling with exhaustion and dripping with sweat by the time she stumbled into the living chamber, and then she froze, almost all remaining hope draining from her. The secret access stairs were down, and of all things, an air taxi rested in the middle of the chamber. She took the stairs up as fast as she could and stared in anguish at the hole in the wall through which the ugly truth had left. All her work was undone. She would have to start again, searching, hiding, surviving, until she could find or repair another functional spacecraft. Well, it was likely that the air taxi was functional. That was a starting point. She descended to give it a look. On the front seat was a pile of preserved food from the ugly truth and a note. "Senator Shesh, we thought you would probably need these more than we do. Don't eat them all in one place. Love, the Wraiths." Only then did Vicky sink down to the carpet Only then did she begin to cry. The ziggurat was a series of high, broad steps. The Jedi leaped up to the next step, ran its width, and then leaped up to the one above, again and again, until they reached the roof. From here they could see the hole in the ziggurat roof widening. With every moment that passed, more tons of rubble poured up and out of the hole and flew out to pour onto surrounding kilometers of buildings. Some streams diverted to hose coral skippers out of the air. The lines of giant boulders still danced their merry circles around Nyax. Luke led the others off at an angle to where each of the boulders in turn dipped down to within meters of the ziggurat surface. As the next one swept low, they leaped, propelling themselves farther with the use of the force, and landed atop the irregular duricrete surface. Luke could feel it as Nyax detected them. The pale giant rotated in the air to face them, his smile changing from one of simple pleasure to one of malice. "This is going to be bad," Luke said. Mara nodded. The wind at this altitude whipped her hair into a life of its own, making it look like a candle flame in a strong breeze. "Any ideas?"
"I have one."
Tahiri knelt to improve her balance while she stared ahead. In the distance, this stream of boulders took a sharp turn, then moved within a few meters of Nyax's position and beyond.
"Just past that point. Distract him. I'll finish him."
Luke cocked an eyebrow at her.
"You'll finish him? How?"
There was something in Tahiri's eyes that sent a chill down Luke's spine.
"He could fight the Jedi just by feeling us in the Force," she said. "He couldn't feel the Yuuzhan Vong, so he had to watch. Well, I'm both."
She rose and turned away from Luke and Mara, then took the long leap to the next flying boulder back in line. She raced its length and leaped again to the third boulder down.
"What do you say we take her at her word?" Mara said. "I'm too tired to argue."
Their boulder reached the end of its straightaway course and turned. It turned more violently than its predecessors had, but Luke and Mara could feel Nyax's intentions in the Force. They kept their feet planted and did not budge. As their vehicle came closer to Nyax, Luke stretched forth his hand. He snatched a portion of the rubble stream from beneath them, bent its course, sent it hurtling toward Nyax. Nyax reacted without moving, regaining control of the stream, hurling it at Luke. Luke leaned over backward, rotating his boulder with him. The oncoming stones crashed into its side and bottom as the rotation continued. Upside down, clinging by virtue of her enhanced force strength, Mara ignited her lightsaber and hurled it. It twirled under the flow of boulders, almost invisible through the dense rain of duricrete. Then, as it came within meters of Nyax, it twirled up and at him. His expression changed to one of startlement. With none of his own blades active to protect him, he slipped sideways out of the lightsaber's path, then turned to watch it as Mara directed its flight. She sent it around in a long loop, preparing it for another approach. Mara and Luke came upright as their boulder completed its rotation, and Luke could feel Nyax's attention on him, too, waiting for his attack. Luke made it, shoving in the force, trying to hurl Nyax off balance and onto Mara's blade. The attack was a success, but Nyax activated all his blades as he was shoved, and with contemptuous ease he swatted Mara's lightsaber away. Power flowed through Nyax, such power as no being alive had ever felt. He could reach down into this world, reach through the false crust beneath him, through the natural stone crust beneath that, all the way to where stone turned to sluggish fluid, and through to where superheated metals ran like river water. He could crack this world in two, could force the meaningless worker things to convey him to another, and crack that one, too. And he was tired of these creatures. They were weaker than he, but so stubborn, even inventive. Nyax raised his hands. He would crack the stone they rode on and send it and them hurtling down into the ruins. Something slammed into his back, just below the point where his internal armor plate protected him. His eyes snapped wide. He had not felt it coming. He used his power to overcome the pain. A second thing struck him. He felt bones in his lower back shatter. Numbness flowed across his legs. He exerted greater control over himself, desperately trying to force sensation into those limbs. As he turned, his third antagonist, the smaller female with the yellow hair, rode another boulder, lying upon it and gripping it with one hand. She looked at him with alien mercilessness in her eyes. She barely registered in his special senses. She must have closed herself off to the power, reducing his ability to detect her, his ability to anticipate her moves. Something was wrong. He had the pain under control. He was full of the power. He should be able to make anything happen any time. He did not understand, for he had not been trained in the ways and use of the Force, that the catastrophic failure of the body's functions could interfere with use of the Force. All he did understand was that his control over the boulders, over the debris flow from the ever-widening hole beneath him, was faltering. The yellow-haired female held up a third missile. It had legs that writhed as she held it. Nyax gaped at her. It was one of the alien creatures, one of the types flung by the warriors he could not feel. Her type was not supposed to use this. Only the flat-nosed aliens were. It was unfair. She had cheated. Before she could throw it, Nyax lost control. He fell, screaming, into the pit he had created. All at once, the boulders came crashing down onto and often through the ziggurat roof. Luke and Mara leaped free, using their augmented power to soften their landing, and rolled up to their feet, looking among the rain of multiton missiles for a head of blonde hair. "There," Mara said, and sprinted. The distance of a ball-playing field away, Tahiri lay atop a small dome, but as Luke watched, as a boulder arced down toward her, the young Jedi leaped free. The boulder crashed through the dome and was gone. "Face to Mara, face to Mara, do you read me?" Luke skidded to a halt and pulled out his comlink as his wife reached and embraced the younger Jedi. "Mara's a little busy right now, Face." He leaped to one side, and a mass of ferrocreet the size of a Y-wing smashed into the roof beside him. "For that matter, so am I. What is it?" "Tell me that the whole mess with the Fountain of Rock was you." "It was. We're inbound. So are a couple of Vong capital ships. You want a lift?" "We do. We'll be there in two." The three Jedi leaped from the ziggurat roof edge to the stubby wing of the Ugly Truth. They squeezed in through the open hatch. Before they were buckled into their restraint couches, Kel had heeled over in a stomach-churning dive into the avenue below. Luke had a glimpse of the construction droid, thought they were going to plow right into it, and then they were level again and accelerating along the avenue. "So," Face said, his tone conversational, "is property damage on a massive scale normal for Jedi?" "That's just if you're friends with them," Kel said. "Wait until you're married to one." "We need to go back," Luke said. "Nyax isn't dead." Face and Kel exchanged a glance. "Are we saving him or killing him?" Luke sighed. "Just getting in his way." Kel shook his head and gained altitude. As soon as he reached rooftop level, he looped around again, back toward the ziggurat. Nyax lay in pain at the bottom of the pit. He'd never known what pain was before he met those three with the power. Now there was nothing but pain. He would find them, and he would kill them. He must do so soon, because he could feel his strength ebbing. No matter how much strength he drew from what lay behind the black wall, he could feel himself failing. Soon he would sleep. He extended himself, finding the minds of every living thing his power could detect. Where a mind was strong and complex enough to hear him, to obey, he looked through that creature's eyes. In the first few moments he could see only a blur of superimposed images. Then he learned to subtract some, overlap others, remap the image into a coherent one in three dimensions. The power wielders who had hurt him were not visible, but two chunks of coral he could not feel with his own power, big ones, were approaching him from two different directions. His enemies had to be aboard them, hidden by whatever power they possessed to block his senses, since they never gave up. They must be coming back after him. They had to be aboard, because he would not sleep until they were dead. He roared out his pain and sent ton after ton of rubble into the sky. Kell lost altitude and slid to a landing on a rooftop 4 kilometers from the ziggurat. From here, they could see the two Vong Matalocs, cruiser analogs, approaching from north and south. Two sprays of rubble leaped from the hole in the ziggurat, each going after one of the Matalocs. Nyax's aim was getting worse. In the first few seconds of the attack, neither Vong ship took a hit, and both fired, raining plasma projectiles as numerous as raindrops into the ziggurat. Luke jerked as he felt his flesh burn. He looked at his arm, but no blackness appeared there, no seared flesh. It was Nyax, his pain being transmitted to all close enough to feel it, and he could see that pain reflected in the faces of Mara, Tahiri, Danny, even Kell. Then the rubble streams hit the Matalocs. They poured across the vessels, some small portions of them being swallowed by voids, the majority eating away at the Yorick coral as though it were sugar. The Matalocs sideslipped, desperately trying to avoid the streams of destruction, but the rubble blasts tracked them, followed them, wore them down. A constriction in Luke's chest, one he had been unaware of until now, suddenly loosened, vanished. He's dead. Lord Nyax? Face frowned back at him. I don't think so. Look, more rubble than ever is flying out of there. Luke is right, Mara said. Her voice had a distant quality as she tried to interpret what she felt through the Force. Nyax is gone, but he's imbued his surroundings with some of his hatred, some of his last intent. The Matalocs rose above the rubble stream, launching a new volley of plasma before the blasts tracked them, tore into them again. In the distance, more Yushan Vong capital ships raced toward the disturbance. It's going to continue, Luke said, as long as some part of him is there. As long as some part of him can exert his will on his surroundings, and that wellspring of the Force allows it to happen. But he's gone. He took a deep breath. Let's go home. Not quite yet, Kell said. You hear this? He dialed up the comm board, and suddenly everyone could hear a noise, sniffing. No, sniffling, weeping. This is from an open comlink face left behind for stragglers, back where the ugly truth was. So someone's there? And I bet I know who, Face said. Vicky, leaning against the side of the air taxi for support, finally heard the hum when its volume rose higher than the sounds of her own distress. It sounded like repulsors, and the noise floated in through the shattered viewport. She moved up to it to look. The ugly truth drifted up into her view, hovering mere meters away. Her heart lifted, then as swiftly sank. Through the ship's viewport by its access hatch, she could see Mara Jade Skywalker staring at her. The woman's features were expressionless, but icy hatred of Vicky Shesh showed in her gem-green eyes, and that hatred froze Vicky in her place. "Can I even ask her for mercy?" Vicky asked herself. "Can I stoop that low?" The answer was simple. "Of course I can. And once I am free again, once I escape, I will make her suffer for that indignity." Vicky composed herself and began rehearsing the words she would say, please, for her life. "Vicky, I knew you were lying. I knew you would return here." Unbelieving, Vicky turned. Danu Aku, his front a solid smear of blue-black blood, stood leaning against the doorway into the apartment. He coughed, a racking, painful sound, and blood dribbled from his mouth. His head hung low. But it did not matter. He was still more than a match for her, and he held his amphostaff in his hands. "I will now kill you, Vicky." He took a faltering step toward her. He was already almost within reach with his amphostaff. Vicky could hear the sound of the ugly truth's side hatch powering up to open. She knew it could not open in time. Cold resolve flooded her, knowledge that she could inflict hurt in her own inimitable style one last time. "No, you won't," she said. Yuuzhan Vong can't kill me. Nogri can't. Jedi can't. You're all beneath me. There's only one thing in the universe that can kill Vicky Shesh. She turned and stepped out through the shattered viewport. Luke and Mara watched her fall. Luke even felt it when she died, a faint diminishment in the Force.
How about that? Mara said. I get my wish.
The Yuuzhan Vong warrior who had confronted Vicky raised a handful of razor bugs to hurl at the ugly truth, then fell over on his back. His chest heaved once, then he was still. Shaken, Luke settled back in his seat and strapped in.
Now we can go.
Tahiri gave him a look that suggested he had taken leave of his senses. Before, you said go home. I thought this was your home, Coruscant.
No.
Luke put an arm around her shoulders, his other arm around Mara's. I thought it was, but I was wrong. No matter what color the sun is, no matter what the furniture is like, home is where my family is.
Tahiri nodded, considering that.
She settled against him, face against his shoulder, and closed her eyes as if to sleep. And for the first time since they'd made landfall on Coruscant, she smiled. Face said, "Ready for a run to space, explosion boy?"
"Always ready, poster boy. Hold on to your awards."
Kel lifted off, turned away from the ziggurat, and accelerated to full atmospheric speed.